the acting is cheesy. The plot is stupid.
I'm sorry, the plot is bad.
That's a little
over.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to a Minter Fresh edition of ARG Presents. Good buddy, good pal, amigo Aaron, joined by a man who may be some sort of mutant camel. I'll give you the Brent.
Yes, I have humps in all the wrong places.
If you just sing the song.
Well, no.
Welcome, everybody. Another round of ARG Presents, the show where we spin the wheel, we make the deal.
Oh, we're bringing that phrasing
back.
That's
right. That's right. Exactly what we're going to do. And this week, we made a deal that we had no choice in making because it was a chat choice special.
Yes.
This week, we'll be playing the Games of LlamaSoft. And Jeff Minter.
There he is.
Jeff Minter now. I didn't realize he was a hot blonde. Well done to Brent.
Thank you.
We'll be playing games of Jeff Minter. We had to pick a couple games from this crazy fellow. Now, when this came up, you didn't seem like you even knew much about Jeff Minter at all.
I didn't.
LlamaSoft. So you never heard the name or the
term. No, I did. And I know he's a wacky programmer that does a lot of animal games, but that was literally the extent.
Well, I mean, pretty much, I think you summed it up.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll see you next week, guys.
He's double wacky. And we're going to look at him. I learned a few things here. And I will say,
good.
Of all the people we've covered on this show over the years,
which is
this guy fits our motif. I mean, he's the ARG-est, if you want me, and I'll explain why in a moment. So, before we get into our picks, I do want to talk a little bit about LlamaSoft. So, just because this was titled The Games of LlamaSoft, founded in 82 by Jeff Minter.
Yeah.
I read a little blurb where he was sitting around with a graphics editor, taking this box of pixels and making a little graphic. He thought to himself, because I made myself a pretty good looking llama. And then I typed under, I just typed LlamaSoft. I put 3 exclamation points, and that's where it came from. So that was the amount of thought that he put into it. LlamaSoft has released 30 games on over 20 platforms. 20 platforms,
yep.
Which is crazy. And
still going.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Jeff refers to his fans as LlamaSofties. Pretty good. So, but really, let's talk about Jeff Minter. Because he is LlamaSoft.
Yeah.
I mean, with the exception of music on some of his games, he pretty much does all the gaming. Minter, born April 62, so about 9 years before me, England. And he's known for his unique programming style,
yep,
when it comes to gaming. He's got a nickname everybody knows called Yak. I was like, why did he call? I just assumed it was because it was an animal thing, but that was his high score name.
Oh, okay.
That's where he got that from. So he would just type, you know, when you typed in your 3-letter name, that's what he would use. He also occasionally goes by the name Stinky Ox and Jeff Minotaur.
Whoa.
Yeah. So, yeah, I know. He lives in Wales, at least at the time of the writing of this little blurb. With 4 sheep, 2 goats, 2 llamas, and a dog.
Yeah.
So it's sort of like your son's wife.
Yeah.
It's got that.
Except all his is in an apartment.
Yeah.
That's not true.
So he broke in, interestingly, in 79 on the Commodore PET, and him and his buddies sort of got together and did a little programming. Get this. I want to go over this wacky stuff because, like I said, he's an ARG special, and I'll explain why. Number one, in 89, Minter helped in the production of the Konix multi-system. You probably don't know what that is.
No.
But so the Konix was just a failed console that was going to come out of the UK. It was supposed to be the King Dog. It's got one of the all-time great pitch videos. It had like a racing car seat that moved. They had all this crazy stuff.
Sounds expensive.
It never got released. Although their joysticks, they did make joysticks. So if you've ever gotten a Konix joystick, that's where it goes. He also wrote stuff for the Pocket PC. You don't see that getting supported that much. Minter's been an independent wheeler and dealer for all his years, but it's funny how often he works with big companies, despite the fact he's independent. So he developed this thing called the Virtual Light Machine. Okay. It's a really crazy, like, audio-visual spectacle, right?
Sure.
And so This thing got added onto the JAG CD, and it also eventually they used a version of it on the Xbox 360 media visualization. That was his stuff, you know, as the train rolls by.
Very good.
That's a loud train right there.
It's coming through the building.
I should mention, this is slightly off topic. I was coming home from the D&D game yesterday, and I got caught by the double train. That hasn't happened forever. The double train.
Yeah, where did you cross the track?
I was coming up from beside the Fruit Pharmacy. I took the back way home. Yeah, that was a mistake.
That didn't work, did it?
So remember when we covered the new one? Remember the new one? He worked on that, too. He worked on some of the visualizations for that. So he also worked on the new one. So here's another one. So he liked to get his titles out quick, brother. And so he was irritated that it took so long to get stuff out to market. So he started making stuff on the portable platforms, iOS and whatnot. And he came up with this thing that was called the Minotaur Project. It was basically their LlamaSoft was going to work on games that they'd done before. Games that were simplistic to get them out quickly to that mobile.
Sure.
This is in the early days of mobile. Now, I had to mention this because he had a great quote here. So they gave up because no one could find them because there was the market's flooded with garbage. You know how they are.
Yeah.
And he posted on Twitter, he said, returning to iOS would be like returning to the scene of a mugging. I would advise any dev valuing integrity and sanity to just get the hell out. That's what he said.
So I think that's fair.
He buried the iOS and the mobile market. Got out of there. So get this. Again, keep in mind, independent studio. In 2013, he did a deal with Sony to create a game for the Vita called TXK. Why do I bring this up? Well, I'm getting there. You ever heard of the Atari Jaguar?
Absolutely.
So Minter had worked with Atari, okay? I mean, they got to him. They said, listen, we need help on this new Jag. He did Tempest 2000, which is arguably the best game on the system.
Yeah.
Again, this is low praise on the Atari Jag.
It is, unfortunately.
If you could probably count the number of good Jag games on one hand, and you could make an argument for not using all the fingers. But anyway, when he got signed to the TXK, he wrote it, he put it out, and Atari sued him. They're like, listen, this is too much. This resembles Tempest 2000 too much. You're screwing us. And he's like, wait a minute, I wrote that. So they sued him. He's one of the few men to be sued for something he did.
Sued for his own game.
And
yeah.
So Sony didn't want to fight it, so they shelved his game. So Atari, and then here's the funny thing, it's not over. Because in 2017, Atari announced that they had partnered up with LlamaSoft to do Tempest 4000 on the PS4. So after they sued him, they're like, listen, we're sorry. We're bringing him back. So then he went back and did another Atari. So he's done these Tempest games on and off. And by the way, he's the perfect guy. And we'll get into more why we get into our games. He's the perfect guy to do recreations or modern updates of old video games because he's sort of always done. That's sort of what he does.
Yeah.
You know? And if you've got trippy effects, double whammy.
Yeah.
Because that's what he does too. Weird, trippy effects. That's his thing. So he worked with them in 2022, December. So just a couple years ago, he went and found a prototype arcade game called Aka R. I've never heard of this, but apparently the news was a big deal at the time. And he actually went through and they contracted him to complete the game, this old prototype. And apparently this is on that 50th anniversary edition CD, the Atari 50, you know. A couple other little tidbits. And this is just some personal things. I love the show Black Mirror. You ever watch that on Netflix?
I know of
it. It's one of their best shows, all right? It's one of my... I highly love The Twilight Zone. This is one of the few shows that give The Twilight Zone... or it's somewhere in the neighborhood of the quality of The Twilight Zone. It's like a modern version. There's an episode called Bandersnatch. This is a great episode because it's about this guy programming the game Bandersnatch for ZX Spectrum. And all the game's sort of haunted, which that game is a game that drove a company out of business. And actually, we actually played Bandersnatch, what it became Bandersnatch, yep. If you'll recall.
I do.
Anyway, and also the Black Mirror episode is interactive. It's like a choose your own adventure. But Jeff Minter's in it. He plays Jerome F. Davies, who wrote the Bandersnatch novel and murdered his wife. So he plays a killer in Bandersnatch. You get to be in the film, which is great. It's funny, at the time, I didn't even notice him. But I went back to watch some shots. I'm like, oh, yeah, that is him. So that's kind of neat. And finally, just the past year, Digital Eclipse announced that they would be putting together a LlamaSoft, the Jeff Minter story, a Gold Master Series DVD game, which is going to include 42 of Minter's games. And LlamaSoft stuff. So this is going to be like, it's a lot like the Atari 50. I saw highlights of this, and it's got a big timeline. You can play all the games. It looks awesome.
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
So this guy has been around the block,
yes,
as it were. It's funny, for as many games as he's made, I hadn't played that many, if I'm honest. And I'm embarrassed to say that I played both these games, which are famous games, for the first time for this show.
Really?
I maybe played yours.
Yeah.
I couldn't remember for sure. And I thought I'd played mine, but I think I played a game that was the same name on another system that's not the same game. So these are two brand new offerings for me. So I'm looking forward to it. Now, did you learn anything about the Minster you want to share?
Him still being active is astounding.
Yeah, oh yeah.
There are very, very few developers, especially ones that have stayed independent, that have started back in the 80s and are still actively programming for modern things. I mean, he's been, not you, you mentioned the phone market, which is very much true, but he's also done stuff for 360 arcade.
Yeah.
And of course the games for the PlayStation. The ability to not only maintain relevance for that amount of time, but also the effort it takes to learn those new languages. Now, he's not out here making high-res CGI mega stuff for the most part, but he's still out there doing a lot of good stuff, coming up with still wacky ideas. Now, granted, I think a lot of his more modern takes are not as off the rails as some of his earlier takes, some of his earlier games.
Yeah.
But the flair is still there. I wish I would have been able to play more of the phone stuff.
Did you play any of the phone stuff?
No.
Oh.
No, that's what I'm saying. Because it looked fun. It looked, you know, dopey.
Well, they mentioned,
get you in, get you out kind
of games. They mentioned a lot of his phone stuff you can't play anymore because they stopped updating it. So you're pretty much boned.
Right.
Unless you use a gimmick.
But I'm guessing those will be included, because if they're going to do 42 games, that has to include the phone games as well.
Yeah. There's also some reimaginings, including the game I did today, and maybe yours. They may reimagine both of them. So it should be good stuff. Just a couple of little notes before we get moving on. He was asked to do the game Polybius, which sort of had that was the infamous killer arcade game. He ended up doing it, and apparently in PlayStation VR, it was quite well received. I saw some highlights. It has there's a little Tempest in there. There's a little, it's again, this is something that is in his wheelhouse.
Yeah, it's a very mesh up of past ideas.
This guy's the VR guy. He should be a guy, for trippy stuff, he's right in your ballpark. I looked over a huge list of all of his games. There's no way I'm going to list all these, but just for reference, the first game they have listed on here is his very first game was The Flex for the VIC-20 and the PET. So he was an early, VIC-20 was his early, and PET were his early systems.
Yeah.
But if you look at if you go down the list here, you know, ZX81, VIC-20, Atari ST, the ZX Spectrum, all the 8-bits wheeled into the mix. Also, the Conex, the new one, C64, MSX. I mean, it goes on and on. They've got his games listed by the generation of console that was out. The JAG, you know, the PC. Something called the GCN. I don't even know what that is.
Yeah, I guess the GameCube era.
So, is it? No. Why would they call it the GCN?
Oh, I thought you said GC.
Yeah, yeah, you're nuts. But anyway, the television, like in Xbox One, PS4, like he's been around forever. And you're right, you have to perpetually update your skills.
Yeah, it is.
So anyway, a lot of interesting stuff here. And it was our job, the Brent, to pick a couple games from the massive works of Mr. Mentor. Do you want me to
go first? I'm going to go first, Aaron.
Okay, go ahead.
Just because I think mine is probably more well-known. And the game I picked was Revenge of the Mutant Camels. This was a C64 game that got ported onto a bunch of later systems.
Yeah.
The came out for the IBM. It came out for the Amiga, the ST. And it's a sequel to Attack of the Mutant Camels.
Yeah.
And this was more from the camel's perspective, if you want to say.
Yeah, I guess I kind of thought about it.
This is 42 action-packed levels, and if you're someone who likes a variety of enemy design, this is your game. Every stage, for the most part, there are a couple duplicate sprites later on, are unique to the stage that they're on. So you might be fighting Pac-Man. You might be fighting Space Invader base unit things. You might be fighting telephone booths. You might be fighting birds, spaceships. It's literally the entire gamut. It was like, man, what do I want to have them fight? I'll just program that in.
Yeah.
And everything has a unique sprite. Every level has a tag when you start it up. It's like, hey, you're going to be fighting this, you know, the theme of the level, which makes for a very interesting scrolling shooter. You play as a camel, so you are bound to the ground except for his amazing leaping abilities. It's something that you can get almost the full length of the screen at a jump, and you have full control when you jump. So you can go up and wiggle around and then use to dodge, but you always come back down to earth, land, and have to keep on going. Enemies in this game will come from every direction, forwards, backwards, from the ground, from the sky, nonstop. This is not a game that you are going to make it through every level and not get hit. It's just not that kind of game. You have a health bar. When you complete a stage, you'll get a little bit of your health bar back. And you can I did fairly well. I can make it 7 or 8 screens before I lose a life.
Yeah.
But there are some screens that are just brutal.
You get a goodly amount of health, too.
Yeah, you do.
They don't hold you too bad on the health.
While you're on the ground, you can move forwards and backwards, as you'd expect. Something I didn't find out until one of the last times I played this, you can duck. And it has this great camel laying down position with the joints actually moving the correct direction. I thought it was pretty cool. Not real useful in the game. I can't think of many times where ducking would have really saved me versus trying to jump away from stuff. But it's neat that it was added in. Another thing that was interesting is you can fire in 8 directions. And this is the very necessary because of the way the enemies come down out of the screen in all the different directions.
It's definitely the most unique thing about the game.
Absolutely. Well, no, I think the enemy variety.
You don't see a lot of games where you have you're basically, this is like if Moon Patrol had 8 directional shooting. It's right. I mean,
it's if Moon Patrol had 8 directional shooting and unlimited enemy sprites.
Yeah. it's real bizarre. It's an odd concept, but it's interesting.
So the way to keep this game fresh, because you've got all these stages, but if you had to play the first couple ones every time, it's going to drag because you're going to die a lot in this game. Even at peak performance, I can't imagine getting through maybe more than 10 of them. You can actually set it up to do random levels, and that will, instead of you playing level 1, level 2, level 3, the first 32 levels completely random on which one you're going to get, because the difficulties of them are really about the same. Like I said, there are some ones that I just get completely wrecked on. The Maniac Manor one is one of the ones that he's on the ground at all time, and he's throwing miners at you, throwing dirt and whatnot. And if you stay on the ground, your health bar will just melt because you don't get iframes in this. You just get a long health bar. I think the controls in this are beyond adequate. The jumping mechanic gives you plenty of distance to maneuver, but it also is a risk because you can't jump twice. So when you jump, you've got the arc going up, you've got the arc going down, and you are at the mercy of when you land. And if you land on enemies, they're just going to pop you for big health.
Yeah.
Would you consider this, Aaron, a high score game, or is this more of a play and get through as many levels as you can game?
Well, I can't get through that many levels, so I'll go with high score. It'd be my response. This game is it's funny. I played both the Mutant Camel games.
Yeah.
This week, I'm glad I played this one. The first one is where you are attacking the camel.
Yes.
It's a straight up ripoff of Empire Strikes
Back. 100%.
Right. Except for the camels are more interesting looking and they shoot. They have better shooting.
They have
ability.
Better. Yes.
And so this one is a much more unique game.
Absolutely.
Of the two. I've seen games where stuff comes down at you like this. Now, again, it's very unique stuff. I mean, sometimes it's like raining cats and dogs. Like you said, sometimes it's Pac-Man. It is pretty wacky. And you're okay if you're fighting mostly, at least for me, if I was fighting mostly stuff that was coming from above, the stuff that gets you is the stuff that's on the ground. It's at the jump.
Yes.
It's a sort of a combination, almost a little bit of like a silkwormy. You know, when you're on the ground, you have a lot more trouble than when you're in the air. I like the character in this in terms of the backdrops and stuff. He'll have pyramids with the seeing eye that blinks. He'll have all this other crazy stuff. Sometimes you don't pay attention to it. Sometimes you do. So a lot of times the action's frantic, you know. But he puts a lot of effort into making the levels different.
Yeah. And well, the background is just a continuous scroll.
Right.
And you will go through different scenarios,
like
you said.
But they name the level.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
And so you know when you're on a different level because it'll tell you the name of the level. And clearly he was drawing on everything that was around back when this game was released.
Yes.
Once you get, so here's the thing.
Uh-oh.
I'm not necessarily a fan of the whole llama camel thing. I know it's his gimmick. He mentioned himself, and I saw an interview with him where he said, listen, when I put a llama or a camel or a sheep in a game, people instantly know it's my game.
That's
and so
true.
And he's still here. So clearly this worked. However, being a cool guy like I am, I would much rather have controlled something that didn't look like a big camel. Personally, I'd like to have seen something better.
Now,
but still, the camel looks good. It's articulated. It's fun. You go from this is a silly game. It could have been a serious game, a cool game, but it's a silly game. Now, I like silly. Don't get me wrong. Silly's okay. But you could have made this a cool game, like with a cooler thing to drive around and cooler stuff attacking you. So that I'm not going to take points off. But, I mean, you leave the realm of cool and go into the realm of silly.
But
I like silly.
This is a silly game. It was never trying to be a cool game.
Yeah, but it could have been because the bones are there to do something that would have been more appealing. I think a lot of – because Minter's stuff is very polarizing. Some people love Minter, and some people don't like his stuff at all because you've got to accept it on a certain level. A lot of his stuff is derivative of other stuff. Now, I think this is this is actually a pretty original title for him.
Except for the enemies are all parody.
Right, but I'm talking about the actual gameplay itself. But some people think his sense of humor is great. It's very British, that's for sure. But, like, we're here in the States. It's not like when I was going to school, people were talking about any of these games. And they were around.
Sure. No, I agree.
Like, it's not like in the UK where this stuff got over. It didn't get over here that much. And and the thing is, some of it's good. Some of the stuff's really good. And I think that it would have been better served if he'd been less goofy. But on the flip side, less goofy without his trademark stuff being in it might make it so he's not still around. So it's a catch-22. But this game, just the fact that the camel looks as good as it does,
yeah.
It moves well. You're right; the ducking is interesting. The more of the same is it was the was the way things went back in the early 80s for gaming. And so the fact that this guy came up with all these different concepts for you to fight, it does make the game feel fresher.
It does.
You know, so I'll give that to him. But I mean, I know this was a, having not played this one before, I enjoyed it. Once you figure out the controls, you know,
hold the button to shoot the different directions.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, it's still, the concept of playing this game, like the shooting the way you do, it's quite unique for a game of this type. I'm sure it hadn't been done up to this point like this. If it had, I hadn't seen it. So yeah, I enjoyed it. I liked it. I like the fact that he, with the backgrounds changing like they do, they give you a different slant. It's not just the enemies. It gives you, it feels like you're going somewhere, you know.
Well,
I don't know if this game has an end or not.
It does. It does. Yeah. Here's my take on the game. I enjoyed, first of all, the gameplay is frantic and exciting and forgiving enough that it's welcoming to anyone who wants to pick it up and try to play it. That doesn't mean you're going to do well, but it means you can get in there and play the game. You can even adjust how long the stages are, which is the options on this game are off the charts good. Off the charts good. So many things you can just...
I didn't pull the options.
Oh, so many things. Just little things you can tweak. Well, like, extend the how long the levels last, how many kilometers your camel walks. Having been able to do random image, random stages instead of the set 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And multiplayer, not at the same time. It is hot seat. But having all that in a game that is based off of this silly notion, this fun notion, is surprising. Because usually these type of games get low effort. I found myself wanting to see what was next. What parody he was going to do next. If I was going to recognize what he was talking about. When he did like the Doctor Who stage, I was like, I get that. I know what that's trying to reference. I get all that. And having that as a driving force in your game, first of all, very hard to do. It is very hard to have enough concepts and span enough, I mean, granted, this was in the 80s, but span enough material that you're going to catch someone who knows the stage. Sometimes you're not going to know the stage, but you still have to keep it interesting. And he does this so well. I ended up watching a full playthrough of this just so I could see all the stages. And there were certainly some stages where I was like, I don't get it.
Yeah.
But it still had still had interesting enemies.
Yeah.
It still had interesting gameplay. And I enjoyed seeing what this man came up with.
Yeah.
The backgrounds. We were talking about it. It goes through Egypt. It goes through a starry night. Well, everything's at night, but it has, you know, just different star patterns in the skies. It goes through a more futuristic city. It goes through like a ruins type area. It's fun. It's all fun. It's all made to be fun. He has little political messages. I mean, in satire, talking about fast food. Talking about software piracy. The scroll at the beginning of this game, did you set through it?
Mm-mm.
It is gargantuanly long. I'm talking like 8 minutes long. And it talks about who he wants to thank, why, how he came up with this idea. It talks about the people outside of gaming. He talks about his game testers. He says that, you know, if you bought this game, thank you so much. And if you copied it, you know, may your armpit hairs be infested by 100 fleas forever. So it's okay. All so tongue-in-cheek. I really enjoyed my time with this,
and
Aaron.
This is your first experience with Mentor, then?
No, I've actually played this before, but I didn't, not to this extent. It was something I loaded up.
Yeah.
Went, okay, it was, you know when you're just trying out game after game after game after game.
Yeah.
I do remember this. I remember walking through Egypt as a camel. But that's the extent of it until I got to sit down and play it a little bit more. I really enjoyed this, Aaron. I'm not going to say this is in my top 10 favorite games or anything like this, but I feel his spirit in this game. If all of his stuff was like this, I would be a happy boy.
Well, you know, I pondered it as you were talking because, I mean, again, I like what he put together here. And I suppose in a world full of people trying to be cool, you need to have a guy like Mentor just being weird to do the job because this game is a strange one. And but I mean, I just think from a gameplay perspective that all the different changes that the game goes through as you skip through it give the game a lot more replayability. And he doesn't phone it in. I will say that. So yeah, I'll give you the high side on that. I believe we got some reviews. Did you notice how did this review from the magazines? This is a game I often heard get a lot of praise, you know.
Well,
and the other one too. Everybody seemed to love these two games. And I was like, you know, I didn't have a C64, and we just again they weren't on my radar at the time.
It's odd. I had access to a C64 through a neighbor.
Yeah,
and
it's always a neighbor, right?
It always was.
We didn't have one.
Now that said, I do not recall ever playing this on his system, and he had a lot of games. Do I think 10-year-old Brent would have been able to appreciate this game? I honestly don't. I think this was a game. I think it was a game made for all ages, but I think it was. A game that was tailored to adults to make adults laugh and to make adults have a good time. And I'm totally on board with that.
Fair enough. We did not get, of course, it occurred to me that you didn't release until the night before.
Yeah.
So we didn't get any action here. Sorry, the Brent. No review action for you.
But would you, you've seemed to have played more games of his than I have.
Yeah.
Where would you rank this in his game list of things you've played? Obviously, you haven't played his modern stuff.
I've played Tempest 2000. I actually own that one.
Okay. Wait, no, this is a perfect question then. Do you prefer a game like Revenge of the Mutant Camels, or do you prefer the Tempest games?
I would like this one more.
Yeah.
I agree. Tempest,
I do too.
That's not true.
You hate Tempest.
I like Tempest.
Oh, well, yeah.
And Tempest 2000 I also like, all right, but I don't love it. You know,
I
think as a concept, Tempest is good. And in the arcade, I like the control.
Yeah, the spinner was great.
But it's a difficult game that I was never very good at.
Sure.
And so this is a game I can more sink my teeth into because of the way it plays. You know, so I'm sure for renowned, Tempest 2000 is much bigger, but these games were pretty big back in the day too.
Sure,
you know. By the way, just one hilarious bit. Of course, Revenge of the Mutant Camels, the sequel to Attack of the Mutant Camels, and the game I chose this week was stupidly released in the United States as Attack of the Mutant Camels. My game, despite the fact that it has no camels in it, and has another game that's got that name. It's a very unusual. Yeah, that's a shoot. So, we might as well go ahead and get into my game while we're at it.
All right.
So, I wanted to play something on the VIC-20. We've been talking about the VIC-20 a lot here recently. And I was like, I'm going to get me something. I'm going to see, because I knew Mentor had done some his earliest work on the VIC.
Sure.
So, the game I chose this week was Grid Runner. Grid Runner. Now,
this was released in the States.
In the United States, Grid Runner was released as Attack of the Mutant Camels. I don't know why.
That has to have been.
It really happened, and that's a shoot. So I don't know if there was a malfunction at the junction, because Grid Runner is a far more descriptive title to this game. So, if if you don't believe me, look it up.
No, I believe you.
Again, this was a Jeff Minter joint. This game got a ports everywhere.
Yeah.
Lavasoft did the publishing on this one. So this got reported over the VIC, obviously, since I'm playing it. I think VIC was the lead. I think VIC was the lead platform on this. The Atari 8-bits, the C64, the Speccy, the Dragon 32. That's right. You can play it on your Coco. And then they remade this. They even remade this on their own system. So, I know there's more than one version for the VIC. There's more than one version for the Atari and the C64. So, there's multiple versions where they've added stuff to it. But this also got remade on the Atari ST, the Amiga. I mentioned the Pocket PC. He remade this through his Minotaur setup on the iOS and Android. Also got remade on Windows. So this thing will, if you want to play this game, you want any trouble finding it, it's everywhere. It's everywhere. I looked up to see what this thing was. According to what I found, now, you can get this game in multiple formats, I think, on the Vic. I think this was released, but I kept seeing the price as £6, an odd price. I don't know if that was, I assume that was on cassette, but your mileage may vary. I know they had a cartridge version of this because I played the cartridge version on the Vic. So
that's not quite budget, but not quite
it's a weird price. This plays on the unexpanded VIX, which has, what is that, 3,084 kilobytes of memory. So that's, think about that. So you're working with the lowest end of what the VIC can do. This is like a, this will run on a stock VIC. So when you see this game come up, by the way, well, let me get into this. I had to look up the flavor text on this because there is some. So I actually found the docs for this. The Brent, they exist. And the backstory here bears some. So here's the backstory for Grid Runner, in case you're interested. In the year 2190, we're getting there, the human race has set up a huge solar power collecting power station in Earth orbit to beam power down to Earth. This does sound like it could happen. Because of its lattice like shape, the power station is simply known as the Grid. Shortly after beginning operation, the Grid was found to be delivering less power than predicted. That also sounds like investigation teams are sent into orbit. They discovered that the Grid had been invaded by alien droids who were using its power to reproduce themselves, massing for an invasion of Earth. That would suck. You built all, you know, and that's, I like the fact that they found that power was lower, but not gone. So the droids are still cool. Because they could have just shut us down. To combat the droids, a special combat ship was developed, small and incredibly maneuverable. The ship drew its power from the Grid, and with such vast amounts of energy readily available, was able to carry an awesomely powerful plasma cannon. The ship was known as the Grid Runner. It was so fast and powerful that with skillful control, it could annihilate vast amounts of hostile droids. The droids have three main weapons. Grid search squads, pods, and XY zappers. And that's where you go in. In case you're wondering what all this stuff is, that's what this is. So now, with that backstory in the kitty here, let's talk about the game proper. Grid Runner appropriately takes place on a large red grid. All right. So if you think back to when you were in geometry class and you were mapping curvatures and stuff, this is a picture. It's a big grid.
Just say grid paper.
Right. Grid paper. Also, that's true. So it's as long as wide as the screen.
Yeah.
Okay. At the top, you've got the name, the high score, or your current score. So you play a green, I would say like an offshoot of the asteroids ship. It's a green triangle with the top little separation in it. And you shoot upwards with your ship. Now, you can move along this grid pattern in a grid maneuvering. So you're maneuvering on the actual grid up to a certain point. And you've got the full range of that bottom area of the grid. Now, there are two pointers that come down the X and Y axis of the grid, okay? These pointers are interesting. So the one that comes down the Y axis, the one that goes down, doesn't do anything.
But it does.
No, it doesn't. Let me explain.
I understand what you're going to say. Go ahead.
The pointer that goes left to right on the X axis, from left to right, the bottom of the screen, can shoot. Now here's how it works. This is so clever. I think this is double clever that someone sat around and thought about this. The aiming of the two grid guns work in tandem. When their two views intersect, that's when the shot will fire. All right. So if you watch those cannons go around, every time they intersect on a path on the grid, that's where the shot will come. You can use this to your advantage because you just don't be where that shot is. Sounds simple.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't think that's an advantage.
But I mean, it does give you, but I mean, it's an excellent, awesome way to just randomly shoot, but not be random. I think that's super clever. I got to give Minter credit on that. Minter had worked on a version of Centipede before he made this game. Okay. I'm sure it was not an official version. And so I think what he did was he took some of the concepts from Centipede and put it in this game. Because starting at the top of the screen, well, I know you're stunned. There is a centipede-like thing will start descending. And as you go up through levels, you'll see more of these things. I believe these things are called grid search squads in the manual. These things will come down the screen going left to right, and they will descend, and then they will, at the bottom of the screen, there's basically a gimmick that teleports them up a few lines so that when they get to the bottom, eventually they'll go back up and start coming down. Here's an added interesting bonus. When the two X and Y guns meet and shoot, they also will deliver, I believe, what's called a pod. And the pod is this kind of a round or, I don't know, diamond-shaped dot, basically. And so if the centipede comes across any of these things in their various forms, it will change its direction. So what this means is I don't want to call it a centipede. The grid search squads, when they come across these things, they change direction, much like the centipede does when he hits a mushroom. Okay, and when they do that, it's diverting. It's a crazy thing, and the pods themselves can also come apart, which that's a whole other thing. So the pods change, like, according to the docs here, because this is kind of confusing. The small yellowish devices that lodge into the nodes of the grids, periodically growing in size and changing shape. When they reach into their life cycle, they hurl a single bolt of unstoppable lethal energy down the grid. Okay? So basically, these things just set up there, they change shape a few times, and they sort of explode.
Yeah.
I was trying to think of a cute way of saying it, but I can't really come up with something better than what they said. Your goal is to clear out all these centipede-like grid guys and clear that level. Well, I'm trying not to call them centipedes, because calling this, let's back up for a minute. Calling this a centipede clone is wrong. That's not what it is. It has centipede-like elements to it, but there's a lot more going on in this than in Centipede, in my opinion. There are, again, this is an homage or derivative title from Centipede. There's no getting around it. But he has changed it quite a bit to the point where it's when you play it, it doesn't really feel like you're playing Centipede. It feels like you're playing Grid Runner. As you get through it, you'll advance, and the game changes by upping the amount of these descending segmented killers as they come down and moving quicker, and that's all there is to it. Listen, I hadn't played this. I thought I had, but when I sat down, I was like, I just looked at it and stared, because if you don't know what you're looking at, it's just like, my God, what's happening? It's madness, you know. Once you get a bead on it, you'll have a lot of fun. This is a rapid fire. You got to think this is an unexpanded Vic.
Yeah.
So the amount of action Jackson you're getting here is astounding.
Yeah.
I mean, there's crap going on.
Incredibly impressive for a Vic.
There's crap going on everywhere. Like, it's amazing. I did a little back research on this thing. Minter wrote this game in the course of a single week, and he refers to it as the best week of work I've ever done. So that's, if he did this in a week, that's incredible. He does mention that he drew inspiration from Centipede. And he also says the name of the game was, this is according to the wiki, it was inspired by posters advertising the film Blade Runner.
Of course, you can tell by the name at the top.
Yeah, it does look like, it's funny, I didn't even notice that until you mentioned it, but you're dead on. In 83, this game topped the U.S. Computer sales charts. So this was no joke. All right, it made big money. It was like the magazines loved it. Everyone loved it. It got over big time. Of course, I mentioned that it got a lot of revivals. For example, in 2002, there was a Grid Runner Plus Plus that was released. There's also a Grid Runner Plus 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 that's out there. I guess he's okay with this. This has been on collections on the PS, on the PC, and other items. It's a very popular game. It was popular at the time. This is one I'd heard of. Like I said, I thought I'd played it. There's another game called Grid Runner that I did play that wasn't this. Brent, what did you think of Grid Runner?
Well, let me start off by saying I played Revenge of the Camels first.
Yeah.
And
this is a distinctly different.
And like I said, I thoroughly enjoyed my time with it. And I was like, all right, Grid Runner. All right, let's pop this thing in. I hated this game.
You hated it? Why?
I hated this game.
Dude, I can't even believe that you're saying that. Why?
First off, I don't like Centipede.
Okay.
Okay. And this, yes, it has distinguishing features that make it different, but the base game is a Centipede clone. You can only move halfway up the screen or a third of the way up the screen. The main enemy attacks by going across the screen till it hits something and then wraps back around. It gets to the bottom, goes, and then wiggles its way back up to the middle and then back down. And I don't like Centipede. And I don't.
Do you not like Centipede?
I just don't like it. I'm not saying that Centipede.
Maybe you picked the wrong occupation.
Now, listen. I'm not saying Centipede is a bad game. I'm saying I don't like Centipede. This game, I do not like. I think it has a lot of unique elements that tries to separate it away from Centipede. The guns on the side, I did not realize the X and Y coordinates is when it would fire.
Yeah, that's cool.
It is. It's a very neat way to make it seem random without it being random and being predictable, not random at all in actuality. I played this on the Vic, and I thought, that's not, maybe it's the Vic. Maybe it's not the game that's bothering me. Maybe it's something about the Vic or my emulation of the Vic. So I played this on the, I played this on a different system.
C64?
No, it wasn't the C64. I cannot remember what it was. But I played this on a different system as well, which the only difference is it looked better. They ran about the same, probably maybe a little bit smoother than the Vic, because the Vic is very stop and start.
Yeah.
But that wasn't it. It wasn't that it was on a Vic game. And no offense to the Vic, I like the Vic. But I thought maybe that
if I was a Vic owner, I'd be highly offended.
I enjoyed Revenge of the Mutant Camel so much. And then I came to this game, maybe it was it wasn't my mindset, because I don't like Centipede, and this is Centipede.
It's not Centipede.
It's Centipede with extra steps. I did not enjoy this game at all. I found it very frustrating. I found it very bland. I get that the whole power space grid, and it's got the red grid in the background. I don't like it. I don't like the fact that between men, at least with Centipede, when you died and you go to the next man, it has that effect where it takes all of the half-shot mushrooms and kind of pops them, and then you go into your next guy. This just takes you to a black screen. It says grid zapper, tells you how many men you've got, and the pause between men feels like forever. I know it's only a couple seconds.
It's
only a couple seconds, but when you die, you come back, and then immediately die again, it sucks. It feels like it just sapped my soul away. I'm not saying this is a bad game. It's programmed well. It plays good. It has interesting elements. But for me personally, I hated this. It didn't have any of the fun. It didn't have any of the unique elements. Going from level 1 to level 2 to level 6 to level 8, it's the same thing.
Well, no, it increases in difficulty and the amount of...
It has more bugs come.
They're not bugs.
Well, whatever. That's it. That's the only change. I was so disappointed. Now, this was his earlier work. I get that. And if I would have seen this in a vacuum, I would have still hated it, but I would have probably hated it less. And again, I'm not saying this is a bad game. It's just not a
you
game
are
for me.
It. You're killing
no,
it.
No, I'm
You're
saying
killing
it's not.
Grid Runner, one of the most famous, most popular games of the 8-bit
era. It is
era.
Simply not a game for me. It's just not a game
okay,
for me.
Okay, I'm going to pick up the gauntlet here on this. I like this game quite a bit.
Okay, good.
What threw me until I got used to it were the XY axis guns. And then once I realized how they worked and that they just didn't shoot randomly and just kill me, that helped me quite a bit.
Sure.
Because I could anticipate where the shot was going to come. The funny thing is, if you watch that too long, you'll get killed. I played this on the VIC. I didn't try any other versions, okay? For this to run like it does on the unexpanded VIC
is amazing.
It's astounding.
Yes, it is. I
and
agree.
You can understand something, the Brent. When this game was released in 82, there wasn't anything running like this with at this speed. Like, this was a revelation.
I agree.
It's funny. I read a lot of reviews of this game. And because also another popular version, this was the C64 version. Everything I read tells me that the VIC version is superior, that runs better and faster than the C64 version. Part of that might be screen size. Who knows what it is? But this, for whatever reason, the VIC's resolution and the way this game was put together, it's like a match made in heaven for this sort of game. I thought the idea of using a grid to control your ship as opposed to the freewheeling centipede, no one's going to have a trackball. The trackball was great for Centipede in the arcade, but the joystick was never a great fit. It was okay.
I agree.
The grid, if you lock this thing into a grid pattern, it works. It gives you some reference with your joystick, and it's a good excuse to not have to even bother with the people missing having a trackball to control it. So I thought that was pretty clever, too. I just thought this was a neat game. Could this thing be expanded? Which is probably why there were so many additional versions of it. You could add more elements to it to ramp up the interest in it. But as it stands, I think it's quite a good game, man. I really enjoyed it. I was surprised. I was surprised how well it ran was a big thing. But I was also just surprised how much fun it was after a spell where I got used to playing it. Like I said, it took a little while for me to get into it. This game, I mentioned that this game got an iOS release in 2012. This game was also in the LlamaSoft Minotaur Arcade Collection 1 on the PC and PS4. So you can get this on Steam, I believe. In fact, I'm 100% sure that you can actually play this on Steam. I mentioned that they updated this in that Jeff Minter collection that they're coming out with. I saw the update. It's this game in like a 3D perspective with a lot of Jeff Minter style wacky graphics and whatnot on it. And it blew my mind. We didn't get any reviews from the users, listeners, I should say, of this, but I did find an interesting review that I think sort of summarizes the feelings this game gave people when it came out for the VIC. This is a VIC review. If you'll indulge me. Again, this one also says it was 6 pounds. It says, wow, this is surely the most that has ever been crammed into 3.5K of the unexpanded VIC and is a real must for enthusiasts of fast arcade action. You know, that's what I'm talking about. Like, these people had never seen anything like this.
Yeah, no. No, this on a unupgraded VIC is absolutely amazing. I'm not denying that by any means.
And they gave it a 5 out of 5 on this, like a perfect score. I only saw a couple magazine reviews of this, and they both gave it a very high score. And so this was well received when it came out. Commodore user gave it 100%. The people in Mobi have it at 7.4, but the Mobi's scoring systems were real wacky now because they combined all formats, which I hate. I hate when they did that. So, yeah, there you go. I enjoyed it. I thought it was a lot of fun. We'll play again. Much fun.
You're going to play this at some point later.
Well, I don't have a VIC. Okay?
Right.
But I did play this on the Mister. But I'm, now I think, I hate to say it, but I probably got to get me a VIC. And somewhere down the line, just because this is another game to put on the pile of VIC games that I thought were good. It's funny, I had a VIC, and I don't know what I did with it. I've never seen it again. No, I'm serious. I don't know where it went.
Your Vic got found abandoned and ran away from
you know, so I don't know if I lent it out. I don't know if I took it, gave it to somebody or sent somebody to take it and fix it. I don't remember if it worked. I don't remember if I had a power supply. It's just one of those things I picked up in a deal.
Sure.
You know, but if you can get a Vic pretty cheap, and I don't need the Vic with the expanded keyboard of death. And the funny thing is I've got one of those DC64 minis in there, and it plays all the Vic stuff on that. You know, and the Mister plays it. But I like that. And it looks pretty much identical to the C64.
Yeah, you're not buying it for the looks.
You know, so, you know. But, I mean, yeah, there's a lot of reasons. When I bought the a TI-99 or was gifted that one, all bets were off. Because I never envisioned getting one of those. But it's just another system where I'm like, once I got exposed to games I'd never seen before, I'm like, man, I was totally wrong on this. And the Vic's the same way. Like, I never gave the Vic the time of day back in the day because the C64 was out pretty quick. I was like, the Vic, you know, and you see it come up. It's got that big fat text on the screen. You're like, but there's a lot of good action there. And this is another one. I think you missed the boat on this one.
I it was night and day. System Shock. Again, I've never liked any of the Centipede Millipede type games.
You need to get over these. This is a lot like Kong. This is all like the Arkanoid.
Yeah.
You need to get over these preconceived notions of what you like and don't like. Much like Jeff Minter would say, you need to open
it's
your
not
mind.
Preconceived.
You need to open your mind to the new possibilities of learning to accept things that you didn't like before. Because you came into this like all Centipede clones, crap.
No, you need to open your mind. I absolutely did not. I couldn't come in with it like,
listen.
You know what, Aaron? Let's just go to the wheel.
Take my hand as we walk down the path of discovery. Come on, DeBrent.
Hold the wheel, Aaron.
Do I get to hold it this week?
No, we didn't have to change a darn thing because we got chat choice last week.
Why did we leave that on there?
Oh, you know, glutton for punishment. It's going to come up again. It's going to come up. Oh, nope.
All right.
Take a look there, Aaron. What we got?
The winner. Oh, what the heck is this? Okay.
Uh-oh. I feel like we're going to wacky land.
This is a game suggestion system suggestion from Andrew Fitzpatrick. The Mimotech MTX. It's a Mimo. I've received a Mimo. I don't think you can see that. It's the Mimotech MTX, Brent. What do you know about the Mimotech?
Andy, why do you not like us, man?
That'll be fun. We'll be trying to find games for the Mimotech. I've never seen a game listed with this having been supported. So something tells
me... It does have games.
Something tells me we're going down a mystery road of pain and agony here. So let's talk about what we're going to be up to next week, Brent. We got 2 weeks to come up with something. But next week we're back. Speaking of the ZX, we're back in a New York groove as we come back around to once again play games on the ZX here. What is it? What do you got?
Ghouls and Ghosts.
Oh, that's right. It's hard to keep track of all this stuff. Why you got me doing it? I'm dumb. I don't know.
I was trying to save you.
No.
I threw you a lifeline.
You
grabbed it and cut it with a knife.
That's right. I'm going to cut you with a knife.
Wave goodbye to the people, Aaron.
Bye,
blow them kisses.
Mwah.
See you next week.